And Saudi Arabia say they are willing to open a new chapter in bilateral relations to help enhance security and stability of the region. A Palestinian man succumbs to injuries he sustained during an Israeli raid on the Al-Aqsa Mosque compound more than 2 years ago. Our people in Bahrain demonstrate in support of hundreds of inmates who are on hunger strike in protest at inhumane conditions of the country's prisons. Thank you for joining us. In today's top story, Tehran reiterates its readiness to cooperate with Riyadh in a wide array of issues, including regional security. Iran's Foreign Minister Hossein Amir Abdollahian said both countries agreed that previous deals regarding security, commerce, and economy must be implemented. Amir Abdollahian was speaking at a joint press conference with his Saudi counterpart. Prince Faisal bin Farhan said Riyadh is looking forward to further strengthening relations on the basis of mutual respect. The Saudi foreign minister said Riyadh was willing to ensure lasting security in the region through cooperation with Tehran. He said King Salman has officially invited Iran's president to Riyadh. Prince Faisal made a visit to the Islamic Republic in June, just weeks after Tehran and Riyadh agreed to resume diplomatic relations. The two countries had severed ties in 2016 following angry protests in Iran over the execution of Shia cleric Nimr al-Nimr in the kingdom. Iran and Saudi Arabia have pledged to work for enhanced regional stability. Earlier, our correspondent Gisumi Shah Ahmadi shed more light on the details of the Iranian foreign minister's visit to Saudi Arabia.
And if you want to read between the lines, there are many key issues and important messages being sent out to the world, including the fact that both countries say that they are prepared to cooperate together on regional security. And this is something that we do know is high on the agenda of the Raisi administration. He has been extending his hand to neighboring countries, and he has been promoting regional security being dealt with by regional countries rather than foreign elements. And he has been able to actually gain a lot of support by neighboring countries on this foreign policy issue that he's been trying to advocate over the past 2 years. And now we see Saudi Arabia, a key player in the region, also jumping on the bandwagon. So this is very important. And then again, Kaveh, there are basically two issues I think any pundit would be looking at in respect to finding out whether two countries have good relations. Are we looking at ties growing and expanding? And one is trade, the second is sports. And the fact that the press conference was wrapped up by the foreign ministers saying that they will be holding friendly football matches.
Political analyst Fawad Izadi says only time will tell whether Saudi Arabia can withstand pressure from the U.S. and Israel and maintain good relations with Iran.
I think the Saudi government has realized that confronting Iran is not in line with their national interest, and it's really not possible to fight Iran in that manner any longer. And Iran historically has been interested in resolving issues with Saudi Arabia. Iran and Saudi Arabia are neighbors. Neighbors should not be confronting each other. I think as time progresses, you will see these type of exchanges. I think with the visit of Iran's president, the ties will improve. There is a question that needs to be answered, and that is whether the Saudis can withstand pressures from the United States and Israel to continue this policy of following their own interest instead of listening to the ill-advised rhetoric of United States and Israel. Whether they can do that or not, time will tell, but I think so far so good.
Iran's President Ebrahim Raisi and his Russian counterpart Vladimir Putin have had a phone conversation on the expansion of regional economic cooperation. That's according to an Iranian presidency official who said the two presidents reviewed the progress of economic agreements, especially in the fields of energy and transit, including the international north-south transport corridor. According to a press release by the Kremlin, the two presidents also discussed cooperation in international and regional affairs, considering Iran's full membership of the Shanghai Cooperation Organization and its interest in joining the BRICS group of countries. According to the Kremlin, the two presidents reaffirmed their determination to continue boosting ties in the fields of trade, energy, transport, and environment. A Palestinian man has succumbed to injuries he sustained during an Israeli raid on the Al-Aqsa Mosque compound more than 2 years ago. 30-year-old Hamza Abu Sneina was shot with rubber bullets fired by regime forces while performing prayers in May 2021. He sustained multiple skull fractures and lost his left eye. According to medical sources, he had been suffering from the effects of his injuries for the past months and his health deteriorated a few weeks before his death. The new fatality came as Israel is escalating its bloody repression against Palestinians. More than 200 Palestinians have been killed across the occupied territories since the beginning of this year. Venezuela has decided to promote its diplomatic representation to the State of Palestine from a representative office to an embassy. Palestinian Foreign Minister Riyad al-Maliki hailed the historic decision, stressing that Venezuela has always stood by the Palestinian people and their cause. The ministry also said in a statement that the decision is the practical outcome of recognition of the State of Palestine by Venezuela in 2009. It added that the move proves Venezuela's unswerving support for the rights of the Palestinian people at all levels. The ministry said Venezuela's decision helps the final establishment of the State of Palestine with East Al-Quds as its capital in defiance of Israel's attempts to liquidate the cause of Palestinians. People in Bahrain have taken to the streets in solidarity with hundreds of prisoners who have been on hunger strike for about 2 weeks. The protests were held in several Bahraini towns. A similar protest was also held outside Bahrain's embassy in Berlin on Thursday. The prisoners in the notorious Jow prison say they have been deprived of adequate health care, amongst other issues. A number of hunger-striking detainees have lost consciousness as the strike drags on. The Al-Wefaq National Islamic Society has called on people to answer the prisoners' call for a sit-in in support of them on Friday. During the past decade, Bahrain has been ratcheting up its crackdown on the country's Shia majority that only demands more political freedom. Massive street protests first started in 2011 but were suppressed with the help of Saudi Arabia and the United Arab Emirates. An Omani mediation delegation is now visiting the Yemeni capital Sana'a in line with efforts to revive the peace process in the poorest Arab nation. That's according to Mohammed Abdul Salam, the chief negotiator of Yemen's Ansarullah movement. He said the priority now is the humanitarian situation in Yemen and its disastrous repercussions in light of the blockade on the country. The Yemeni negotiator said the other party to the process should show its goodwill towards Yemen through measures to ease the situation. Abdul Salam said it's necessary to remove restrictions on airports and ports imposed by the Saudi-led coalition, which started the war on Yemen in 2015. The fighting in the country has subsided following a UN-brokered ceasefire between Ansarullah and the Saudi coalition. But that truce was expired in October. Talks are now ongoing over a new, possibly permanent, ceasefire. The United States has approved the transfer of F-16 fighter jets to Ukraine from Denmark and the Netherlands. A U.S. official said Washington has assured both countries that it will expedite the approval of transfer requests for F-16s after Ukrainian pilots are trained. The transfer of F-16s from U.S. allies to Ukraine needs Washington's approval. A coalition of 11 countries was due to start training Ukrainian pilots to fly the fighter jets this month in Denmark. U.S. officials have privately said that the F-16 fighter jets would be no game changer when they arrive, given Russia's air defense systems and its air superiority. The Belarusian president has rejected allegations that Russia is trying to push his country into joining the war in Ukraine. Alexander Lukashenko made the remarks in an online interview on Thursday. He said Belarus will never participate in the war if Ukrainians do not cross its border. The Belarusian president added that Russia has already achieved its goals in Ukraine and it's time for the two sides to sit for negotiations without preconditions. Lukashenko also issued a stern warning against invasion of his country. He said Belarus will give an immediate response to any act of aggression with everything it has, including nuclear weapons, without prior warnings. Last month, Moscow deployed tactical nuclear weapons to Belarus, a move that was denounced by Ukraine's Western backers, including the US. The Economic Community of West African States has once again threatened military action against the junta in Niger. A senior ECOWAS official says the community stands ready to intervene militarily if diplomacy fails to restore order. The official said constitutional order will be restored in Niger by all means available. The official was at a meeting of ECOWAS army chiefs in Ghana to discuss the details of a standby force tasked with potential engagement in Niger. The official said a majority of the 15 ECOWAS member states are prepared to participate in the standby force. Niger's military officers deposed President Mohamed Bazoum in late July. They've defied calls from the UN, ECOWAS and Western powers to reinstate the president. The West is now mulling sanctions against the junta. We have discussed the issue in our news review program. Let's take a listen.
Fabiomi Azikiwi, editor of the Pan-African Newswire, joins us from Detroit. And Jonathan Ofe-Ansa, publisher at Africa Briefing, joins us from London. Welcome to you both. Abiyam Azikimi, first over to you. It's quite incredible when you think about it how ECOWAS is pushing, in a sense, this military action against Niger. Some are saying and deducting that this is a pressure that's being exerted by the U.S. and also by France in order for ECOWAS to somewhat do the bidding here. But it has actually deployed a task force that is on standby. Doesn't that go against the sovereignty of a nation when it's being threatened by military action?
It'll be 2 weeks on Sunday since they gave a deadline to the National Council for the Defense of the Homeland in Niger, which, by the way, now has appointed a new prime minister, a new cabinet, and governors for the various districts in Niger. I think they're still being pressured by the United States and by France to take drastic action against the government, the new government in Niamey. And I believe that the reason why they have not embarked upon a military intervention is because of the widespread opposition that has developed over the last 3 weeks to any type of military intervention in Niger, even in Nigeria itself, which would have to supply the bulk of troops in any intervention. The Senate there has rejected the idea of having a military intervention, and that Senate is controlled by the president's party, Bola Tinubu's party, the All Progressives Congress. It's also been rejected by other nation states, Burkina Faso, Guinea, Mali, Mauritania, Algeria. And also yesterday, there was a meeting of the Peace and Security Council of the African Union, which could not endorse an agreement that was put forward by ECOWAS for military intervention. So I think this is very positive that various sectors within West Africa have stood up and said this should not be another Libya, it should not be another Ukraine.
Indeed. We have had some of the countries there that our guests there from Detroit mentioned, Jonathan. For example, Burkina Faso and Mali, who have said that they are going to get into action. They're going to counter-react militarily were there to be any type of military action executed against Niger. Tell us how significant that is, especially in the context where you're looking at countries that, are rejecting this, in this case in point, France's, I guess, presence in the colonial sphere when it comes to the way that it treated Niger. And as you're well aware, not only in terms of its natural resource, like uranium, but also its cooperation with the U.S. when it came to the big drone base that the U.S. has there in Niger.
Yeah, we mustn't forget that the major countries that are opposing ECOWAS plan to use military force are those countries which are under military rule. You mentioned Burkina Faso, you mentioned Mali, you mentioned Guinea. They are all under military rule, and they are all against France, the former colonial power. I mean, Burkina Faso, you know, has expelled French troops from the country. So has Mali. And Guinea also has problems with France. So you can imagine the anti-French sentiment running across all these countries. And the general feeling is that, suspicion is that the ECOWAS is being tele-guided by France and the U.S. and other Western countries to use a military force. And if, and I'm not sure that the use of military force will yield any good result. Any, if anything, it is going to massively destabilize, you know, the West African sub-region, right? And again, I believe that ECOWAS was too hasty in imposing ultimatums, imposing deadlines on the coupists in Niger, giving them 1 week, you know, to restore constitutional rule, to restore the ousted President Bazoum, you know, to his position.
Thank you very much. We continue talking about this for a long time. We just don't have the time. That's Abayomi Ezekwe, editor at the Pan-African Newswire. Thank you. And Jonathan Ofeansa, publisher at Africa Briefing from London. Thank you. With that, we come to an end for the news review.
Just listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily round the clock for listeners across the globe. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard via the internet, shortwave, FM, and satellite. Our listeners in the Indian subcontinent can listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 25 meters, 11,645 kilohertz, every day from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in Europe can tune in to the English service of the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 31 meters, 9,855 kilohertz, and in Southern Africa via shortwave 31 meters, 9,835 kilohertz every day from 1920 to 2020 UTC. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our programs via FM 91.5 megahertz. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAT 5 and Intelsat 39 and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.ir/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. please send your correspondence to the English program, PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you. In the limelight.
Industrial action and strikes have been waged on a scale not seen in the United Kingdom for decades in the past year, with walkouts hitting the National Health Service, railways, airports, schools, universities, postal services, civil service, and the media industry. We take a look at some of the world press and media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. British newspaper The Independent has covered this story and tells us more. According to new analysis, nearly 4 million working days in Britain have been lost to industrial action in the past year. It finds that the strikes sparked by soaring inflation and years of stagnating pay are Britain's most intensive since the 1980s. As workers battle with the government and private employers to ease severe real-term wage cuts, the extent to which key sectors have ground to a halt, at times literally, has been further evidenced in a new report by the Resolution Foundation. Published as junior doctors continue a four-day walkout, the think tank finds that sectors including healthcare, education, postal services and railways have been responsible for 96% of all days lost to strike action since 2021. Laying bare the squeeze facing workers, the report found that real terms pay in the 3 months to May was 4.1% lower for all workers than in 2021, with that hit deepening to 9.2% for those in the public sector and to 9.8% in the healthcare and social care. Correspondingly, the report found this appears to have contributed to an increase in job vacancies, with the number of available roles in healthcare, education and public administration 33% higher in March than in December of 2019, and up 23% across the rest of the economy. British newspaper The Telegraph has also covered the same story. Industrial action has been waged on a scale not seen in the United Kingdom for decades in the past year, with walkouts hitting the National Health Service, railways, airports, schools, universities, postal services, civil service, and the media industry, among others. In public sector pay battles, Prime Minister Rishi Sunak's insistence that granting workers' demands would further fuel inflation means his government has continued to take a tough line, despite opposition MPs' warning of the strike's impact on an economy already dicing with recession. Ministers have frequently been charged with failing to properly negotiate with unions, while often bizarrely seeking to use the chaos to score political points against the Labour Party, despite Keir Starmer's visibly less than sympathetic stance on the matter. Meanwhile, the government's anti-strike legislation finally passed into law last month, despite severe defeats in the House of Lords. But although ministers have now finally agreed pay settlements with several groups, including nurses and teachers, Industrial action is still being waged on several fronts, including by junior doctors and railway workers, with the latter marketing the first on a national scale since the 1980s. Nai Cominetti, senior economist at the Resolution Foundation think tank, said, "The recent strikes from teachers and junior doctors reflect the fact that real-term public sector pay has fallen severely in the past few years, as well as the stress and difficult workplace conditions frequently reported by workers in these sectors." Cominetti added, "However, the inflation-driven pay squeeze should also be understood as part of a broader pattern of poor pay growth across both the public and private sectors, and falling pay satisfaction among public sector workers." Nai Cominetti added, "Going forward, the government will need to balance fiscal caution with the need to provide a level of pay for public sector workers that reflects the very real difficulties that they face in these sectors and ensure that vacancies in these sectors continue to be filled." Cominetti added, "In addition, there should also be a renewed focus on improving pay and working conditions for workers in essential sectors like social care that are largely not unionized, but which are still experiencing the effects of job stresses and pay squeezes." British newspaper The Evening Standard has also reported on the same story. The latest data from the Office for National Statistics, ONS, revealed almost 4 million working days have been lost to strike action in the United Kingdom in the past 13 months. Some 3.9 million days were lost through labour disputes from June of 2022 to April of 2023. This is the highest for any period since between July of 1989 to May of 1990, when 4.8 million days were lost. December 2022 saw the most working days lost, with 829,000, the highest total for a single month since November of 2011, when the figures were at 997,000. The data comes as the National Health Service junior doctors walked out for 72 hours as part of the ongoing pursuit of improved pay and working conditions. And teachers in England announced that they would take more industrial action in the coming months. According to analysis by the Press Association news agency, disputes affecting London and North West England together accounted for nearly a third or 30% of all losses in the past 13 months. There were 576,500 days lost in London, or 16% of the total, and 526,100, or 14% of the total, lost in northwest of England. Southeast England saw the next highest number at 466,200 days, or 13% lost, followed by Scotland, 459,500, or 12% of the total lost. Wales recorded the fewest days lost to strike action, 125,500, accounting for just 3% of the UK's total. Teachers in England, represented by the National Education Union, the NEU, are the latest union to announce that they will be walking out after striking in July in a long-running dispute over pay. Major strikes by train operators have also caused complications for the public in recent months, making life difficult in half-term and for those attending specific events such as the Eurovision Song Contest in Liverpool, the FA Cup Final in London, and the Epsom Derby, as their own long-running pay disputes rumble on. The most recent action by the RMT Union and ASLEF on 31st of May and 2nd and 3rd of June came after months of negotiations with the government failed to yield a solution and is unlikely to prove the end of the matter. Of the 3.9 million working days lost to strike action from June 2022 through to July of 2023, more than half, or 57%, or 2.1 million, were in transport, storage and communication industries, a reflection of the frequency of rail strikes, but also of recurring disputes involving Border Force staff and driving instructors. Also, according to a senior healthcare boss, junior doctor strikes have cost the National Health Service about £1 billion, as a fifth round of industrial action threatens further disruption to patient care. Julian Hartley, chief executive of NHS providers, said hospital trusts were having to pay premium rates to consultants to cover the roles of junior doctors whilst they were on the picket lines. He said the walkouts are expected to lead to 1 million procedures and appointments being cancelled and rearranged by the time the round of action is over in 4 days' time.
I'm a teacher.
I'm a researcher.
I'm a mother.
I'm a lawyer.
And I believe in acting kindly toward you, because you are...
A Muslim lady.
You are very special. There's no one just like you. You are very special. And I'm so glad you're mine.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of Arab English Radio. Muslim ladies from all around the world, welcome back to a new episode of your very favorite program. Well, this is Asma, at your service as the host. And just like always, we have Sister Zainab in here. Assalamu alaikum, sister.
Alaikum assalam. Thank you so much.
So, it's such a pleasure to be here with you again. There are some moments in life in which you feel so courageous, like you are a warrior. And there are some times in life in which it is good for you to feel the fear. Like there are some special situations that might get you in more of troubles. In those special situations, you have to be the one who fears the consequences. So, speaking of the quote of Imam Ali alayhi salam that we recently are searching and digging deep into, that talked about some special characteristics that are good to be attributed to a woman, one of those features and characteristics was fear. So it's good for a woman to feel fear, because being too courageous for a woman might lead into, fires.
It could lead into a situation which would be hard to handle. So that's why Imam Ali alayhi salam says cowardice or fear is one of the good traits for women, but not a good one for men. And this is because, like, if she a coward, she is fearful, she is scared of anything that gets displayed before her. She will be frightened with everything that befalls her. And this fear mentioned in this hadith refers to the chastity of women, meaning that a woman must be cautious towards non-mahram, especially when... with everything that befalls her.
Mm-hmm.
So this fear could not be said as, to be frightened, to be scary.
To be a coward person,
exactly.
A chicken-hearted.
You
no,
could
it
use
doesn't mean
this
that.
As synonymous with being cautious.
Yeah. Being protective.
Exactly. So when a woman has this trait, she can greatly, greatly enhance her personal safety, both in public and private settings.
Exactly. Yeah.
And now, with this trait, she avoids unnecessary risks.
Yes.
That may come your way, You mm-hmm. never know. If you don't have that cautious nature and that...
Even we can see that in movies and in TV series and in stories. There are many women that get into hard situations just because of a challenge. They had no part in it.
Exactly.
But they were challenged, and then just because they wanted to show that, I'm strong, I'm a warrior, they went into an unknown road that led to nowhere.
Exactly. So you end up yourself in a trouble by the end of the day.
And in too many regrets.
Exactly, by the end of the day. So you have to be very cautious not to invite those unnecessary mm-hmm. risks, not to invite that trouble into your life, not to have that situation where you regret tomorrow. So also, this trait would also help you reduce your stress.
Yeah, just before you get into stress, let's go for a short break in order not to get stressed.
Yeah.
And then we'll be back.
This is IRIB English Radio. You're listening to Muslim Lady.
Okay, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, dear ladies, this is your own studio. This is your program, Muslim Lady. And we're talking about some characteristics that are good to be seen in us as women. One of them is fear, and today we're talking about fear. It's good to be cautious, just as Sister Zainab mentioned it. Well, we do not say that you have to be chicken-hearted, and nobody would ask us to be like that. And even we have it in our Islamic history, that there were women who were so bold and so brave. But at the very same time, in some special occasions, it's good for you to be not like fearful as in coward, but fearful as in just to be cautious about the consequences.
Exactly. So yeah, we were saying that it would help you reduce stress, this trait that Imam Ali Sam explained, that this one is good for you. So by being, that fearful or having that cautious nature and taking extra care, basically, in your actions, you reduce the level of stress and anxiety that could come your way by minimizing the chances of making mistakes or putting yourself into difficult mm-hmm. situations. Because you have now, kind of drawn a line for yourself as well, your personality.
Exactly.
So you don't invite unnecessary trouble mm-hmm. for yourself. And it could also help you protect from, physical harm, theft, fraud, or any other types of crimes that are so, so common in the society. Mm-hmm. So if you have that sense of fear within you, you would actually protect yourself with that sense mm-hmm. as a woman. And
again, this feature has been recommended by Imam Ali alayhi salam to be seen in a woman, to be actually growing in a woman, just because to protect her.
Again,
just
to
work
her
as a shield to protect her from the possible harms that might get into her way.
Exactly. All these three traits that we have been talking about, like showing arrogance and when she's in non-mahram, public or that kind of setting, and being fearful, being a miser, this all is showing the value of a woman or how she could protect herself, her family, mm-hmm. and also others.
Like from unnecessary problems.
Exactly, that could come her way unnecessarily. Mm-hmm. So this trait of being fearful would also encourages her to stay mindful, of surroundings.
Exactly.
Because that way, it increases your awareness and you're more focused,
mm-hmm.
So, and over time, when you practice this, sense of, as a woman, I have this sense of fear where I am very cautious about any kind of thing. Like, it's not always coming out. It's always about, like, buying medicines, It's it could be about buying medicines. It could be about buying anything from the market. It could be related to your health. It could be related to your personal growth. It could be related to your mental growth. It could be related to your child's future.
Yeah.
Like, a mother really fears, will my son be fine in that school or not? She fears, will he be able to cross the road properly or not? If this fear did not exist, then the care would not come.
Exactly, yeah. This is a very important point.
So that care...
With fear comes the caring
exactly.
characteristic that you build in yourself.
Yeah, and also develops a discipline within her, because when she acts with this cautious nature around her family,
she sees the consequences for everything.
This cautious nature requires discipline. And when she practices this, it would intentionally, it could translate into other areas of life, like, work, relationship, and any other spheres of life, mm-hmm. even health. like I mentioned.
Exactly.
So, and she tends to be now better equipped, and she can handle, you know, tough situations or unexpected challenges mm-hmm. or setbacks that could come her way with this trait.
Exactly. And now we have a situation, which is we have to go for a break. So, dear listeners, dear ladies, thank you for staying with us. Still be with us. Just let's go for a short break and then we'll be back. After all we talked about, there is something very important that I would like to add, because I guess this is so much important to note. And I mention it in every episode that we're talking about the code that has been given to us by Imam Ali alayhi salam. And that important thing is the fact that you should not take his words literally, and just like the things you hear, you translate them just that way. No, these are not things you understand word by word, because, well, being arrogant, being a coward person, being a pompous person, and being stingy, these are not good adjectives to be added in front of anyone's name. But these are some protection strategies that are given by the wisest man to the Muslim ladies to care and protect themselves and to shield themselves from the coming possible dangers. So when we say you must have some sense of fear in yourself, we do not mean that you should be a coward person, because a coward mother is not going to bring about children who are so strong and so brave. And I already mentioned it in the very first part of today's episode that even in our Islamic history, we have these a growing list of mothers, of sisters that are so brave and so fearless. But the kind of brave and courage they show is the kind of courage that would identify the future of a nation, the future of entire community. So take that into mind. When we say fear, we mean fear in some situations that might have some consequences that would hurt you in future. And being coward totally is not a good and appreciated characteristic.
Right. And this trait that Imam Ali alayhi salam explains for women has to be taken into, as you said, you know, we have to read between the lines and
exactly.
contemplate it properly. So this is basically, it could help her to protect herself from danger and different threats or situations. Or whenever a woman is alone at home, her husband is not around or some caretaker is not around, this sense of fear could let her be more protective for herself, or, you know, respond very quickly to the threats. And now also the sense of fear towards money could be very, very helpful. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not just fear in just terms of security only.
And by the way, when she fears, just at the moment when she starts to fear, she starts to bring about some new plots to figure out some new ways to get out of the, you know, the problem
situation
that they are getting into.
Right.
So whenever she feels that fear, she could do some wonders.
Right.
So this fear that must exist in a woman is a sort of fear that would make her more productive.
Exactly. And it would actually, I would say, provide more financial stability.
Yeah.
Because if she is very cautious with and she fears overspending, she could be helpful in promoting financial stability mm-hmm. in the family, and she could prevent overspending and debt.
Exactly.
So she could be very, very productive here with this particular trait. But at the same time, if the same trait is seen in man, as Imam Ali alayhi salam said, this is not good in man, it could not be taken as a very good quality, because a man would be seen as a coward and really does not, you know, we would say it does not suit him,
exactly.
this trait. So because a woman sees man as her protector. So when this fear is in a man, she'll no longer be able to see
this. That would be a misery. Well, a man must always be so strong-hearted, this person who's so courageous and shares that courageousness with other people.
Exactly. Otherwise, like the family he's protecting or someone who's living under his protection, they would feel anxiety and really stress-related.
We have to disorders. Say, exactly. So still we have to say that a woman must be courageous as well. But the thing that she needs to take into consideration is the fact that an excess of everything would be too bad for her.
Exactly.
So being coward is not something appreciated in a woman. But having a sense of fear that might protect you from the possible dangers is the best thing that you could build in your characteristics.
Yeah.
So thank you, Sister Zainab. And thank you, dear listeners, for staying with us. Until another session, I bid you farewell. May Allah protect you and shower you with His blessings. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
I know I'm waiting, waiting for something, something to happen to me. This waiting comes with trials and challenges. Nothing in life is free.
Follow us on social media to stay up to date on the latest global developments. You can keep in touch with us by following us on Twitter at twitter.com/ParsTodayEN. You can also follow IRIB English Radio on Instagram via instagram.com/ParsTodayEnglish.
In the limelight.
China has accused the United States of militarizing space in the wake of tensions over the Taiwan Strait. We take a look at the world media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. China's Xinhua news agency has covered this story and tells us more. A Chinese defense spokesperson on Friday, 14th of July, reiterated that China stands for the peaceful use of outer space, firmly opposes weaponizing it or turning it into a battlefield, and is against any form of arms race in outer space. Tan Kefai, the spokesperson for China's Ministry of National Defense, made the remark when commenting on a U.S. military commander's words about the space race. Tan Kefai noted that the United States has picked up speed in militarizing outer space over recent years, formed cliques of space alliance, and stonewalled the process of space arms control. The U.S. actions have taken a severe toll on space security and global strategic stability. The spokesperson for China's Ministry of National Defense reiterated, noting that outer space allows no flames of war spread by warmongers. Tan Kefai urged the United States to respect the common aspiration of the international community to stop provoking arms race and work with other countries to maintain enduring peace and security in outer space. Also, the Chinese Foreign Ministry spokesperson Zhao Lijian has reiterated that the United States should stop fueling the militarization and weaponization of outer space. Zhao Lijian made the remark at a regular press briefing when asked to comment on reports that the U.S. Space Force recently activated the National Space Intelligence Center. Zhao Lijian stressed that space is a global public sphere and a key factor in humanity's security and well-being. Preventing a space arms race is an important prerequisite for ensuring peace, stability, and sustainable use of outer space. The United States is the main driver in turning outer space into a weapon and a battlefield, the Chinese Foreign Ministry spokesperson added. For a long time, the U.S. has pursued a strategy for dominance in space and openly defined outer space as a warfighting domain, and it has been aggressively developing and deploying a variety of offensive outer space weapons, such as directed energy and counter-communication systems. Zhao Lijian added that the U.S. frequently held military drills and advanced all-round military build-up and preparedness in outer space. The Chinese Foreign Ministry spokesperson Zhao Lijian said the United States has engaged in intelligence theft and close-in reconnaissance in the space domain, just as it has done in other domains. This would bring a serious negative impact on global strategic stability and constitute a grave threat to peace and security in outer space. Associated Press has also covered the same story and tells us more. Amid a freeze in military-to-military contacts, China is accusing the United States of militarizing outer space just the day after it protested the passage of a U.S. Navy P-8A Poseidon anti-submarine aircraft through the Taiwan Strait. The Chinese Defense Ministry spokesperson, Colonel Tan Kefai, said on Friday, 14th of July, that U.S. actions, including the establishment of a space force in 2019 as the newest branch of the U.S. military, have had a great negative impact on space security and global strategic stability. In recent years, the United States has accelerated the militarization of outer space, Tan Kefai said. He added, I would like to reiterate that China adheres to the peaceful use of space, firmly opposes the weaponization and the making of space into a battlefield, and opposes any form of arms race in outer space. The Chinese Defense Ministry said that its spokesperson was responding to recent concerns expressed by Space Force leaders over China's rising capabilities, calling it a classic cognitive dissonance. China's advances in space include its own orbiting space station and plans for a crewed lunar mission. In 2007, China faced international condemnation over using a missile to blow up one of its defunct weather satellites. While the United States has sent officials to Beijing, including Secretary of State Antony Blinken and Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen, ties remain at a historic low. China has pointedly refused to re-establish contact between the two militaries, possibly as a protest against U.S. sales of weaponry to Taiwan and sanctions against the Chinese Defense Minister Li Shangfu. Although it is recognized as international waters and airspace and functions as a crucial route for international trade, China continues to claim a proprietary role over the Taiwan Strait that separates the mainland China from Taiwan. On Thursday, 13th of July, the Eastern Theater Command of the Chinese People's Liberation Army, whose area of operations faces Taiwan, said it had scrambled fighters to follow and monitor the U.S. plane throughout the process and dealt with it in accordance with the laws and regulations. Theater spokesperson Colonel Shi Yi was quoted as saying on social media, "Theater troops maintain a high level of alert at all times and will resolutely defend national sovereignty and security along with regional peace and stability." The U.S. 7th Fleet said a Navy P-8A Poseidon transited the Taiwan Strait in international airspace on Thursday, 13th of July. The website metro.co.uk has also covered the same story. China has accused the United States of accelerating the militarization of space, which could lead to future wars in orbit, just a day after protesting the passage of a U.S. Navy aircraft through the disputed Taiwan Strait. Chinese Defense Ministry spokesman Colonel Tan Kefai said, "United States actions, including the establishment of the Space Force by President Donald Trump in 2019, the newest branch of the U.S. military, have had a great negative impact on space security and global strategic stability." The Chinese Defense Ministry spokesman, Colonel Tan Kefai, said, "I would like to reiterate here that China adheres to the peaceful use of outer space, firmly opposes the weaponization and the making of space into a battlefield, and opposes any form of arms race in outer space." Experts have widely predicted that international conflict will one day move into outer space. China faced global criticism back in 2007 when it blew up a defunct weather satellite 500 miles above Earth. The Chinese Defense Ministry said Colonel Tan Kefai was responding to recent concerns expressed by Space Force leaders in the United States over China's rising capabilities, calling that a classic cognitive dissonance. China also has its own space station and has pledged to land boots on the moon by 2030. In 2021, Beijing signed a memorandum of understanding with Russia, pledging to jointly build a permanent base on the moon, known as the International Lunar Research Station.
Iranian news, Iranian culture, Iranian voice. This is IRIB English Radio. This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
Your headlines for this hour: Yvonne in Saudi Arabia say they are willing to